Thank you, Sherry, and I'll try to do justice to Dick's talk. Interestingly, he and I put our talks together separately. He was going to cover epidemiology. I was going to do some of the clinical aspects, but as you'll see, there's some overlap, but we come at it from different perspectives. Dick has been an epidemiologist. Our paths have crossed over many years, and one of the first places he did work on asbestos was at a particular plant in Tyler, Texas, which probably about 25 years later I ended up doing some work at, though I had started doing some work back on the East Coast a bit earlier. So we'll try to give Dick the justice he is due. I apologize for any failings in presenting his material. So we're going to talk about asbestos epidemiology. And the history of this, for those of you that think that asbestos and asbestos-related disease is a new problem, it really isn't. At the Charing Cross Hospital in London, back in the turn of the century, that's turned two centuries ago, Dr. Montague Murray reported on a fatal case of lung disease, which didn't have a name in, at that time yet, of a 33-year-old male textile worker who died about 1900. He didn't report this until 1906. You'll see a quote from his paper that, I'll have in my presentation. And the point about this was that Dr. Murray made note of the fact that this was the 10th and last of a group of 10 young men that had gone to work in an asbestos factory where they did the carding of asbestos. And he reported that his 10 mates or his 9 mates had predeceased him all of chronic lung disease. The first radiologic description of asbestos-induced lung disease was done by Pankost and Pendergast. They reported this in the American Journal of Rankinology and Radium Therapy in 1918, the same year that insurance companies in the United States and Canada decided they would not insure asbestos workers due to unhealthy conditions in the industry. So by 1918, it was very much appreciated that working with asbestos was not good for you. And if anybody knows about this kind of stuff, it's the insurance industry. The term asbestosis was coined by Dr. Cook, who's a British physician. He coined the term in 1924. He was involved in the case of Nellie Kershaw, who had, at the age of 12, not so unusual in those days, had started working in a cotton mill, and then at the age of 13 had gone to work at an asbestos mill, and at the age of 26 worked at the Turner Brothers asbestos facility, and she died of asbestosis at the age of 33. She also made it into the literature. The epidemiology continued to be gathered over time. Dr. Merriweather in 1930, and again you'll see a comment that I had in my presentation, did some of the first epidemiological work of asbestos workers, and he conducted a study in the asbestos textile industry where he reported on pulmonary fibrosis. What was interesting about the paper that he wrote with an industrial hygienist, a Mr. Price, was that not only did they report on the asbestos textile industry, but they made several other points. Males got disease. Females got disease. It occurred in the textile industry. It occurred in the brake-making industry. It was a hazard no matter what the industry, no matter what your gender. This, while reported in England, did make it across the water, and there were reports in 1948 of excess lung cancer in both men and women who were registered and noted to have asbestosis. The first designation of asbestos as a lung carcinogen was in 1942. Wilhelm Upper wrote in a textbook that came out in that year, on occupational cancers, that he considered asbestos a carcinogen for the lung. Fast forward a few more years, 1955, the first epidemiological study, in fact, of lung cancer, EUPRA decided that it was a carcinogen without epidemiological studies. So Richard Dahl reported from a cohort of 113 asbestos textile workers who had been employed more than 20 years. There were 11 lung cancer deaths, less than one had been expected. So again, the epidemiology told us, and this was the first good epidemiology, that asbestos was in fact a carcinogen for the lung. Studies for the relative risk of developing lung cancer have varied anywhere from 1 to over 17, with the average relative risk working with asbestos being somewhere close to 10. Dr. J.C. Wagner was a pathologist working in South Africa. In 1960, he reported on 33 cases of mesothelioma between the years 1956 and 1960. To put this in perspective, mesothelioma was an extraordinarily rare disease. The hospital I trained at in New York, where there's an old history of studying mesotheliomas, there were roughly one case seen every 10 years out of 100,000 hospital admissions. Relatively, about 1 in a million persons would show up with a mesothelioma. He reported here on 33 cases in 4 years. They all occurred in the northwest portion of the Cape Province, where they had chrysotillite mines. So now we had mesothelioma, which we now know is a sentinel tumor related to asbestos. In this country, Dr. Tom Mancuso did some of the first epidemiological work to identify mesotheliomas. He looked at mesotheliomas and lung cancers and asbestosis in a facility in Ohio. As you see there, death certificates identified 19 lung cancers, 28 asbestotics, and 7 mesotheliomas, with other cases to be found. This was from a particular factory in Ohio. He subsequently went on to report on 43 cases of mesothelioma in the railroad industry from one roundhouse in Pennsylvania. The physician that I trained with, Dr. Irving Selikoff at Mount Sinai, started doing work outside the manufacturing arena and looked at end product users. His claim to fame was studying 17,800 asbestos insulation workers, and he concluded that end product users were at the risk of developing asbestosis, lung cancer, mesothelioma, GI tract cancers, and others that we'll talk about. You notice the salamander down there, that was the International Association of Heat and Frost Insulation and Allied Workers, a group that he studied, and that cohort of 17,800 is still being followed today. With the coming of OSHA in 1970, Selikoff and others lobbied Congress about the hazards of asbestos and about creating this agency. And one of the first standards promulgated was, in fact, the standard for asbestos. And it started at 5 fibers per cubic centimeter, which was to automatically drop to 2 fibers per cubic centimeter shortly thereafter. The other interesting thing, if you know the relationship, of course, between NIOSH and OSHA, NIOSH makes recommendations. OSHA is the enforcement and regulatory agency, but they recommended the control of asbestos. But as you notice there in the highlighted portion, when it came to controlling workplace hazards, they were really dealing with asbestosis. And they said that only a ban could assure protection against the carcinogenic effects of asbestos. So this was a document put out by NIOSH back in the 1970s, which was in a sense calling at that time for the first ban on asbestos. If one fast forwards to now, and we're looking again at the epidemiology, the World Health Organization has estimated that there are about 90,000 deaths per year from occupational exposures to asbestos, roughly 43,000 mesotheliomas, 39,000 lung cancers, and 7,000 deaths worldwide from asbestosis. We'll comment on other matters as well. Now, is this disease really a pandemic? Well, the definition of a pandemic, as put forth by an epidemiologist, is the excessive occurrence of a disease in a large portion of the world. The H1N1 pandemic, which is what it was called by the World Health Organization, last year resulted in 14,000 deaths. That was considered a pandemic. The fact that we have 90,000 asbestos deaths every year, I think, should also be considered as a pandemic. And as Dr. Lemon notes in the footnote there, the 90,000 is undoubtedly an underestimate. It does not include other cancers, such as cancers of the larynx, ovary, and some others that we'll talk about later. Asbestosis deaths, as data collection gets better, have been shown to increase over time. And here's the worldwide data for mesotheliomas, and as you see, with some variation for a fairly uncommon disease, it's been going upwards. In Canada, it's been going upwards. And deaths from asbestos disease, as you see there on the right, in the top right corner, has also been going up around the world. The pattern, however, is changing. Where the disease occurs has changed. The Europeans, for example, who banned asbestos as far back as 30 years ago, are now seeing a decrease over time in asbestos-related deaths, where other parts of the world, like Asia, where they continue to increasingly use asbestos, that is not the case. World production has been, unfortunately, fairly steady over time. The peak in the United States was in 1972 in terms of importation and use, but as you see, 1960, the world uses about a little over 2 million tons, and in 2007, the last year we have data for, the world still used about 2 million tons. Again, where it has been used has been shifted. And here gives you that data, whereas if you go and look at what was used in Europe in 1960, by 2000, it was markedly reduced. Same thing in North America. In this country, we only import about 10,000 tons a year versus about 775,000 tons in 1972. As perhaps Dr. Castleman will comment, what it doesn't look at is imported finished products that contain asbestos. Unfortunately, if you look at the data from Asia, you see it was fairly modest in 1960 and increasing. And overall, the worldwide use is still quite considerable. Again, as an epidemiologist, how do you stop an epidemic? And the great John Snow removed the pump handle to stop the source contaminated water back in London. And the way you stop an epidemic in other ways is to have global eradication. It's been done for smallpox. You vaccinate people. There's the history, as you see there, of the eradication of smallpox starting in 1796 with the invention of a vaccine, and by 1979 the world announced the global eradication of smallpox. Can that principle be used for something like asbestos? Well, we think so. Its legacy will continue unless we put the brakes, that is asbestos-free brakes, on the use of asbestos. So putting the brakes on asbestos-related disease follows, as you'll see here. Ban asbestos. Recognize remaining sources of asbestos. Access asbestos release from these sources. Keep records of these sources. And eliminate remaining sources where asbestos can be released. And lastly, survey patterns of asbestos-related disease. It's what was done with other materials that caused epidemics, and you can, in fact, apply that to something like this. So the question is, are you doing all you can with regard to getting asbestos eliminated from our society and ultimately from the whole world? And that is the message that Dr. Lemon wanted to bring you.